Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pentecostal Pen podcast, engaging Christians to reach out, make disciples, and lead for the cause of Jesus Christ. For this month's episode, we are featuring a lesson by Reverend Lori Wagner on the subject of apostolic writing. Sister Wagner is an ordained evangelist with the United Pentecostal Church International and an author of numerous published books and articles. Here's Sister Wagner. Enjoy.
So I do want to mention that writing, I believe, is a ministry, and writing opened other doors for me to minister, and it may do the same for others, because if people value what you write, they might want to hear more from you. I think that writing is so important for you and for me. We need credible, educational, inspiring, equipping, historical, apostolic resources. And that's why it's very good what you're doing, because you need to hone those skills and use them for the kingdom of God. No matter if you're end up working in the church office, doing a newsletter, or whatever, or you end up on a national speaking circuit, you're going to use writing and words and language to communicate wherever you are. And what you learn, even in preparing a research paper for a college class, can help you prepare and deliver a beautiful message. And so writing is a ministry that meets many needs. It preserves our heritage. I do a lot of research, and we're missing stuff because we weren't writing. There's not a lot of documentation. As we, as a organization, we didn't have our own writings. Obviously, when you begin and you take the writings of others that are the closest to you and you use them, but then things seep in through the fiber of perhaps fundamentalist or evangelical or whatever, and it skews, because everybody has their focus. And as apostolics, we believe in the inerrancy of scripture, as well as the gifts and the moving and the today operation of the spirit. And so we want our writings to reflect both the word and the spirit together. And so that's why we really need apostolic resources. It's a vital need. It doesn't just preserve our history. It even if you look backwards, it shapes our theology. If you look back to Martin Luther, when he first started honing things and nailing his thesis, he actually went back and developed his thoughts along the way through his writing and through his study. His theology and things were growing and changing. And I've written books, and I'd like to go back and change them because as you do more and you learn more and your writing improves, you're like, oh, I had a good start there, but I could make this better. And so it actually informs and shapes our message, and it has a role of evangelizing. Your writing can go, Brother Raymar, your writing goes across the ocean to the Philippines every time. Your writing, it reaches other worlds. And even with Google Translator, somebody can pick that up and read it in another language. Your writing can reach where you could never go, and it can outlive you, and it can make a real impact on the people that you're connected with now, people that you'll never meet, and people that are going to outlive you. So I always want to go to the Bible. I'm a Bible teacher. And so if you look at the role of a scribe in scripture, they weren't just copying stuff. They were learned people. They were interpreting scripture, and they were teachers of the word. And so I was thinking about, as I was praying and preparing for today, how the scribes, they had an important role to do, but Jesus also corrected them. They were always referenced. They were referenced alone because they had their own role to play, but they also are referenced with the priests, the chief priests, and the Pharisees. And so Jesus actually corrected them. And so I want to make sure that I'm on track. And so let's just lay a little foundation here for writing ministry. If Jesus corrected the scribes of his day, what do I need to make sure I have right as the foundation of my writing ministry today? And he corrected the scribes. Woe to you. You remember, you scribes and Pharisees. He corrected them for being a hypocrite. Oh my word. For writing stuff that they weren't living up to. For teaching things that made life harder for the people trying to follow after God. He corrected them for losing the spirit in the word. And the scripture warns us about getting entangled in little minutiae of word meanings. And I think it's very important. I love going to original languages. I love doing textual study. I love knowing what that word really means, but don't get lost in the letters and lose the meaning and the life and the hope and the message that the word offers. That's our goal. If this is a ministry, yes, the word will correct, but its purpose is to offer life and hope and fellowship and communion. And so what did Jesus say? He said, you pay attention to all those little teeny little things and you lose the weightier matter. And the weightier matter is your relationship with God. And so I would like to begin talking about writing by saying that your writing is going to be fueled from your personal devotion and consecration to God. We're apostolic writers, and the apostolic comes before the writing. We've got to be in communion with God. We've got to love him with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. And you might find some interesting nugget to write about, but if you don't have the Spirit of God inspiring you and guiding you, it might be beautiful, but there might be no life in it. And we want to offer life. For those of you working on a research paper, this isn't necessarily as honed in on what you're doing today. But that's not all the writing you're ever going to do. That's a preparatory exercise. But when you begin writing as a ministry, your seed for what you're writing about is going to come from your personal study and taking time to quiet yourself, to meditate on the word, to marinate in the word, and to be inspired and changed to whatever topic that you're going to write on. One of my books, Holy Intimacy, I was just reading through the Bible and the Holy Ghost arrested me in the tabernacle. And I stayed there for months and I couldn't leave. He just had me stop the Bible reading. You're not going through the Bible this year. You are studying the tabernacle. And so I did, and it changed my life. And so I just want to make the point that the most valuable things that you'll ever write, if it's a book, if it's a message, if it's a Pentecostal pen post, is going to come from your personal study and devotion. Make the time to listen. Make the time to journal. But do study. Study to show yourself approved unto God, a workman who needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. We need to study not to show that we got it right, but so that we can share what's right. So we won't be ashamed in the way we live, and we won't lead people in shameful paths because we don't understand and rightly divide the word of truth. We've got to be people of integrity, and our writing has to have integrity. So I want to give you a little testimony first about how my writing ministry began. Your story is going to be different. Everybody's is. So we all have a story, right? I was married to a wonderful man. I was not raised in church. I got into church and the Lord gave me everything I ever wanted, a beautiful home and a husband who loved me. And we had two beautiful children and we were serving God together and life was really good. And then he got cancer. And he was sick for a year. It was a really rough year. Won't go into all that. But God took him. And as I was praying after his passing, I was asking the Lord, using language that I normally didn't pray in, but I asked the Lord, I said, God, that chapter in my life is closed. The page is turned and there's a blank page in front of me. What do you want me to write on it? And he impressed me with something very personal, a charge for me, who'd never written anything. I mean, I'd written a little poem here or there. I'm a reader. I love to read, but I'd never really written anything of consequence. But he told me, I want you to write about Gates. God told me that. And so I didn't know what that meant. Gates, there's so many gates, gates of Jerusalem, gates wherever, you know, spiritual gates. I didn't even know what it meant. And so I felt bad because I tried many times over the next almost decade to write on what I didn't know what the gates were. And so I would just set it aside. And then one day as I was on a family vacation, my sisters and I were talking about the subject. And my one sister looked at me and said, you know, you have a lot of wisdom in this subject. And it opened to me in that moment, in that instance. I knew what the gates were. And after that family trip, I came home and sat down at my desk and I wrote the introduction and the chapter titles for my first book, Gates and Fences, Straight Talk in a Crooked World. And so God, sometimes he puts a burden in our heart and a passion, and we're not wrong. We just don't have the timing right, or we haven't, I hadn't lived through enough life yet. I hadn't experienced what I needed to write that on that topic. But when I did, I knew it was what God wanted me to do. And that felt really awesome until I started trying to publish it and everybody rejected it, including the Pentecostal Publishing House. And that was a real blow because I really felt like God had not only told me what to do, but he equipped me and directed me, and I was in the vein of what he wanted me to do. Well, if I was doing what God wanted me to do, how could these doors be closed? Right? Did you ever face that? And so my husband and I prayed about it, and we decided to invest in it. In today's society and world and technology, you can self-publish a lot easier for a lot less than you used to could, and even now more. It's even easier than it was in 2006 when I did my first book. And so we invested in it, and then the Pentecostal Publishing House wanted it after it was produced. First of all, just a little background for those of you that are writing and hoping to get in with Pentecostal Publishing House. There's two different arms. There's Word of Flame Press, where they actually produce and print products and market and distribute. But then there's the Pentecostal Publishing House, which acts as a distribution center for not only the Word of Flame products, but also other things like you can buy a Thompson Chain Bible there. We don't print those. We get them from other sources. And so as an independent author, you can sell your books through the Pentecostal Publishing House, even if they don't publish them. And so I had, and also background, when I submitted it, nobody knew who I was. And I'm not in ministry. My husband's not in ministry. No name, no academic credential. Just this girl with this manuscript here. Jesus told me to do this. Don't you want to take it and send it all over the world? It didn't work out that way. But it was a time of transition, and the publishing house was really in the red, and I was an unknown. And they also only have X number of resources each year. Staff, they can only produce X number of books. And so they told me no, but they were willing to take it after it was printed. And so that's just out there for the marketing part, if you ever get to the point of wanting to publish a complete work, a book. And that is the story. Now, Gwen Oakes, who many of you are too young to probably remember, was the ladies president at the time. And she got a hold of my book, which was on the blessings of biblical boundaries. And she asked me to write for Ladies Ministries. And so I ended up writing The Girl in the Dress, which just broke every publication record at the time, went into reprints like 6 weeks and then 6 months. And then, I mean, it sold 20,000 copies right away. It broke records at that time for the publishing house. But if I'd have taken the no on the rejection on the first time and said, well, I must have missed it, that never would have happened. And I wouldn't be talking to you today, and I wouldn't be speaking or having the evangelistic ministry. And so I just want to encourage you that if you really feel that God has called you to do something, and you're in agreement, you know, my husband and I prayed and we agreed and we invested, and then God used it to open doors. So that is my testimony. Push back through the dry spells, that 10-year period almost, and don't just take a rejection as a no. And there's all kinds of nuts and bolts of the industry about literary agents and publishing and all that stuff, but we won't even get there because you're still writing your research paper. The nuts and bolts I want to talk to you about today is you need to share your message. Like I said before about your own devotion, that God is going to give you what he wants. He's going to impress on you. And I know that there's marketing techniques and like, well, where do we have a hole that we need to get filled with? There's a gap in our literature that we need to fill. And yes, there are those types of things. But for you and me, especially those just starting out, you need to share from your own experience. When I was a little girl, I always wanted to write. I loved Little House on the Prairie. I wanted to be Laura Ingalls. I was the second of four girls. I read Little Women, I don't know how many times. And Joe was my hero, the second of the four girls that loved to write, and the dreamer and the thinker. And that was me. I wanted to do that and be that. And the lessons that we learn from them is that they wrote about their experiences. If you ever read Little Women, she wanted to write these adventure novels, and she did it under a pseudonym of a man because she didn't think the people would receive her writing as a woman. And but then she turned in something that was a life story that was real and personable, and it opened the doors for her to really write and share. And so I just want to encourage you to write what God is, probably your own life lesson. Whatever he's taking you to school over is maybe something other people can learn and grow from your experience. We all know that people like, for instance, the person that was the drug addict and had the testimony, where's their most vital ministry? Dealing with people from the same background and issues. And so God has uniquely gifted you. He's uniquely positioned you, and he's giving you something to share that's going to encourage and minister to others. If you've ever listened to me speak, I've referenced this story more than once, but I just feel to share it with you today because this is a ministry. There was a time that I was asked to speak in Colorado for a ladies' event, and I was, as far as I knew, the main speaker. Well, the ladies' leadership changed, and a couple months before the event, I get a phone call from the new ladies' president telling me, oh, Sister Wagner, we're excited for you to come, but we just wanted to let you know we do have another speaker booked also, Sister Vesta Mangan. And I was like, no, you're kidding me. It's a joke. It's a test. You can't expect me to stand next to her on the platform and minister. And I really had to pray through the challenges that I was facing. I'm like, what am I, the comedy act next to her? This is so not right. But God spoke to me in my prayer and said words that changed my life, and I hope encourage you. He said, I don't need another Vesta Mangan. I already have one of those. I need you to be who I've called you to be. And I need you to share your message with your personality and your gifts. And so that is a very important message that I hope encourages each of you today. You don't have to try to be Raymond Woodward or somebody else, Brother Bernard or Terry Shock or you don't have to try to be anybody else. Be authentic and be real and be transparent and honest, and people will value what you have to say when they understand that it's comes from your experience and your passion and your burden. Amen. So nuts and bolts, be who you are, but do it with as much excellence as possible. You're going to develop a voice. And I actually pulled all these books out yesterday. It's a sample of some of the stuff that I've written. Well, it's most of the stuff that I've written. And so what you'll see is there's Sunday school literature. There's historical Christian fiction romance. There's Bible studies. There's theological work on gender and ministry and a handbook on preaching like a lady. And there's a book on a biography on somebody. All of these have a different approach. And each project has its own voice. Now, when you're doing a series, you want to make sure that you maintain the same voice. You want to maintain the same voice throughout your book. And you also want to maintain your voice throughout your series. To be real honest, when I was doing the Pure Past series for Sister Oaks, when it got time to do the book on sexual purity, I told her, I said, I don't think I'm the person to write this book. I was a cocktail waitress before I came to the Lord. And she said, no, we want you. We want your voice. We want to maintain that feel. So I'm just saying that it's important, especially in a series or whatever you're doing, that you maintain the voice in the presentation. And you can, you know, wherever you feel maybe inadequate on a subject, you just cite other sources, you get other people's testimonies, you share your testimony of what didn't work, and you go forward. But you have a voice, develop your voice, and then be true to it. Writing is creative work. And for apostolic ministry, it's a creative spiritual work. Wow, we could just like put point one, point two, point three. We can make a thesis right here. Writing is for us creative spiritual work. And it's hard to do because it's creative to just do it on command. I'm working on a project and I can't get in the groove. And then finally at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you get in the groove and then you got to make dinner. And what it's just so hard. So I would just encourage you as much as possible when you find that spot and things are flowing, to try to stay there as much as you can, but also be purposeful. I know that there are people that live much more structured lives than I do, and they'll schedule in a block of time or a day in their calendar to dedicate to writing. But as a creative work, I had an image today as I was thinking and preparing of a stream. A stream is beautiful. Think of a beautiful, sparkling, moving spring in the sunshine, but it's moving and it's got life and it's got vitality. It's got healing. It's got nutrition. It's got cleansing, all of those beautiful things that a stream that you're riding is going to bring, but it has to stay in the banks or it's going to get sloppy and messy and people, you know, it has parameters to it. And so just like the stream has banks, there are rules to good writing that we have to follow. And some of those change and some of those, I mean, even if you're writing, I don't know what your standard is for where you're at right now, but like I'm writing an academic paper and I have to use SBL guidelines. If I'm writing something for headquarters, I have to use Chicago guidelines and their house guidelines. If I'm writing something that's just inspirational, I write it totally different. And so you do need to know the guidelines and also where you're submitting it to, because in some places, if you capitalize he for God, that's not right. In other places, people will be offended. And in some places, if you say he for God, they'd be offended. So you just really need to know who you are talking to and use the right language. You need to know the basics of grammar. You need to go and do your best to get the best education that you can for writing and writing development. You can take creative writing classes. You can do workshops. I am self-taught. I went to the library and I checked out books on creative writing and self-editing, because you need to know, if you know what to look for in editing, you can fix your writing And so I was, there's books out there for free, for borrow at the library, self-editing for fiction and self-editing for nonfiction. And I would recommend those books, because when you write something the first time through, it's just the first time through. That's the easier, that's not always the hard part. It can be, but if you're really writing something lengthy, like a master's thesis or a book, just know that they say that the first manuscript, first draft through, is about a third of the work, which is unbelievable, but that's what they say. So your stream has movement, and sometimes as we get out there and we're writing, even on a research paper, an academic level, you feel like you've got your thesis statement and you know what your goal is, but you start doing research and you start writing and you're like, whoa, that really went a different way than I thought it was. And that's not necessarily wrong. And I liken it to a boat. You know, you just got to get out there and start moving, and then God can move the rudder and he can fine tune you and he can show you what you need to do. But be flexible. And as you're writing, I just brainstorm every possibility and every thought, and be curious and be observant, but also be the devil's advocate. Because I need to say, well, this is what I think, but what are people going to say in opposition? And I need to listen, and I need to be able to address and refute and express my position as it applies in reality. And in reality, there's some that are for, some that are against, history, whatever, theologians, whatever. Just you want to ask those hard questions. And I don't recommend this to new believers, but we need to read the opposition of the opposing thoughts on our point, so we can craft and hone our presentation. But so you need to know your grammar, you need to know your styles. I would recommend that everybody take, you don't have to take it with Dr. Norris at UGST, because it might kill you if you do, but a biblical interpretation class. Because if we're apostolic writers, and so we need to know that we're rightly dividing the word of truth. And that means not taking things out of context. It means understanding culture. It means understanding so many things that we just don't get. I took that class as I was writing Preach Like a Lady. And I can tell you that I don't even know which book that was, but it was somewhere around 20. And it totally changed the way I approached the presentation of this material. We've got to be people of integrity. We can't skew. We can't, okay, true story, real recently, I was in a service and this minister gets up there and he starts taking something so out of context, he apologizes in advance. He says, I know that this is taking literary license. Well, it didn't even play out what was being said. It was nice and inspirational if it worked. However, we've got to make sure that what we're saying is really what the word is saying. And I love analogies. And I think that there's not always just one meaning, but there's multifacets of meanings and so many scriptures and stories and parables. And there's so much that we can learn, but we also need to be true to the meaning and not take things so out of context that they actually discredit our scholarliness and our education. And we just can't take license, too much license. So that's just a big lesson to learn. And as you read and do your devotion, something might pop out to you and you think, ooh, I've never thought about it this way. And then you start digging in and you're like, oh, well, I was wrong. It can't mean it that way. You just have to be real honest and be willing to pitch stuff, because some stuff comes into your head and it's just your head. And we could be wrong. Nobody's got it all right. So in writing, different projects are going to take different techniques, and you need to know your target audience. If you're writing a research paper, who is your target audience? It is that professor that's grading your paper, or the TA. We've got to know our audience, and we've got to give them what they want the way they want it, right? So if you're writing fiction, you're going to approach that differently than if you're writing a biography or a research or a study. When I never thought I'd write fiction. I did not think I had it in there. But what I did is I had an idea in my head, and I just started sketching things out. I actually wrote the last chapter in rough form before I went and wrote back, or started at the beginning, because I knew where I wanted to go. But what I did is I made a character sketch file. And so each person in my story, I would refer back to that, the color of the hair, the way they set their jaw, or some quirkiness or characteristic or personality or facial feature of them. And so that way I was consistent throughout, and even who's their brother and sister and where are they and all of that stuff. Where do they live? What are they doing? What's their job? So I was able to go back, and that was kind of like a key. And I did an outline. Other books, I don't do that. When I do biography, when I did Sister Willie Johnson's, I was just doing research, and I was collecting information. So what I do is I make a project file, and I know that there's all kinds of technical tools out there that can help you do it better and more efficiently than I do. I don't use them. I just use Word and files. And then I hire somebody to do the graphics. I let them do what they're good at. So for these books, I'll take and make one master file, and then it will have different topics that end up being different chapters usually. And I just start dumping my research into those files. Like for Sister Willie, it was chronological, her early life. Then by decades, I split it up. And then it did have some other things like her music ministry or whatever. But so you approach that differently, whatever's going to work for you. For a research project, I use kind of the same approach where I make files of categories for a big project. And then I go back and after I do my research, I create chapters, and then I create the whole, and then I get the flow. For a research project, I normally don't do an outline. I might have a general thing, some points where I'm at and where I want to go, but I need to let the research tell me what's there. I have to let the research write the story. And so that's why, Brother Raymar, I have this dilemma about my paper. I actually started out with more than that. That was when I honed it down and even didn't pull some in. I created this big document, and it was 74 pages of research for an 18 to 20 page paper. But that's the way my brain works, and your brain might work differently, but I have to get all the full picture before I can figure out how I want to present this information. I have to let it talk to me. I let the research tell the story. One thing, footnote as you go. Oh my word, you will save yourself so much work if, as you're writing, taking those notes and putting them down, just write the book and the page number. Because if you go back and try to find it later, you'll be sorry. I've wasted so much time going back when I could have saved so much time by just doing that footnote as I went. And when you're doing a research project, that's really important. Keep your focus. You should be able to give a little elevator speech on your project, your book. If somebody asks you, what are you writing? You should be able to say it in a sentence or two. I mean, if it's an article, that's different. An article is something valuable, but if it's a huge project, you know, that's a different. But we need to keep our focus. We need to watch our bunny trails. Oh, I'm so bad about the bunny trails because I want to learn everything. And I'm like, surely they are going to find this as fascinating as I do, but their brain's just like going, oh, we were on this track and where'd she go? Is she going to come back? Is she going to finish it? And so we need to be careful about taking those tangents that, although we find interesting, they don't necessarily add to the message we're trying to get across, especially in writing an article. You only have, what, 500 words, 1,000 words, 1,500 words. You've got to be concise and you've got to stay on topic. So develop your gifts. I also, when I first started writing, I joined a local writers group. It was at Barnes and Noble and they met twice a month. And guess what? It was not a Christian group. It was a mixed group in my community. And I got to listen to their stuff and they got to listen to mine. And so it was actually an opportunity to share Christian writing in a different environment, which made me a better writer because I say things the way I think I want they mean. And you just don't even realize how it's coming across sometimes. And so to get that feedback is really good. And also, if you can find a partner, Sister McCoy partnered with me on my last book. And oh, what a difference it made because she helped me clarify the content and the flow. And she would read things and say, and why, or and to who, and can you document this? And does this agree with that? And so just if you can find a partner who's interested, and one of the things that I appreciate about her so much is that she values this as a ministry. And so she's investing in it with me. And I believe that God has blessed that collaborative effort and made a better, richer product, resource. So I would encourage you, if you can get somebody to help you on the project as you go through, if it's big, or at least read through it at the end. They have in writing groups, they have what's called a beta reader. And that's just like a non-professional, a sounding board. It's somebody that's going to test read for you. And that's always helpful. Get as much feedback as you can. It will make your work better. The more you edit it, the better it's going to be. And I would also recommend, if it's an important project, some of these things I just self-edited, but get a professional editor that knows your subject or at least your audience. Like if you're doing something that needs academic, you need an academically minded person or persons to read it. If your goal is a different group, then get a different group. We always need to make sure that we're hitting that target market. I think you need to know your weaknesses as a writer. And so it's true confession time. Redundancy. Redundancy in teaching and writing is a necessary evil. It's necessary and it's evil. We need to, you know, sometimes you have to say what you're going to say before you say it. And sometimes you have to say, well, this is what I said. But then you can just really just beat the dead horse to death. And you can just say things way more than they need to be said. And I've even read academic books where I'm like, would you just stop saying that over and over and over again? So check for redundancies. Transitions are a weakness for me. I just expect everybody's brain to jump with me from one thought to the next thought, or I want them to go, aha, instead of leading them and telling them how I get from one thought to the next thought. And that's important when you're writing. When you're writing a chapter, does it have an introduction and a closing? Does it have a transition from one scene to the next, one thought to the next? If you're even doing a something in part one, part two, part three, is there a little explanation? Oh, what is this and why is it different? And how does this transition? And I'm still working on that. We don't need to assume that people know things. You would need to assume that somebody's going to pick up your reading, especially if it's not at an academic level, if it's an article or whatever. Anybody on the internet can hit that. People with no level of biblical knowledge. And so we need to assume, just like when you're a preacher and you're ministering in the church, you don't assume that everybody knows Noah's Ark. because not everybody does. So you might need to add a little bit of explanatory words into your writing, because you don't know who's going to read that and what level of knowledge and biblical knowledge that they have. Cut, 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 edit, 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 refine and hone. One of the hardest things that I had to do, because I already told you I have to have all the information. So, and then I'll take it and I'll write beautiful content. It's so beautiful. How could I cut it out? How could I cut my beautiful words and let them drop into the black hole, never to be seen? Well, you need to do it. And I'll give you a little testimony. As I was doing Preach Like a Lady, I had that happen. And I was like, God, this is important stuff. I really want to use it. And so I made this file called the X Files, and the stuff that I pulled out of the book, I actually have used for something else. I'm developing a website where there's training. And so I'm teaching on those subjects that aren't in the book on the website. And so don't be afraid to let your beautiful words go. You might use them again somewhere else, but I tell you this, the more you know on a subject, the more your credibility on the subject rings through, even if you don't tell everything you know. People can tell if you know the subject you're writing about, or if you're trying to buffalo them. So never think that you've wasted time when you've cut content. It's enriched you, it's enriched your knowledge, and that does come through in your writing and ministry. Tips, write for your audience. What's their reading level? Sometimes I can write at too high of a reading level for the audience I'm reaching. When I wrote The Girl in the Dress, I wrote the book and then I ran the check on the reading level. And I'm like, oh, we don't want a 12th grade reading level. We want to bring that reading level down. And so you simplify, and the thesaurus is your friend. Just make sure that you're reaching your audience. Practice writing. Have a simple goal and keep a clear purpose. Edit, remove rambling words, and tighten up the writing. When you read those editing and writing books, you're going to hear things like about losing those prepositional phrases. We have too many prepositional phrases, and we have too many strings of prepositional phrases in a row in our sentences. Get rid of unnecessary words and don't gush. It was beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. We need to be careful about using words that don't really mean anything, that are overused. Very, very beautiful. Use words instead of adding adverbs. I was looking on a site once, and it said, instead of using words like ran really fast, say sprinted. Tighten it up. Make it better writing. Edit ruthlessly and realize that your first draft is your first draft. Don't worry, just get it on the page. You can go back and clean it up later. When Kara and I were working on the project, we actually, on Kingdom Come, we did a mind map, and I'd never done anything like that. She's so smart. She just totally brought me to a new level. And that was really interesting, because what we did, we would just put things together in categories, and some of this stuff just took its own life as we did that, and it helped shape the book into sections. Write conversationally and with your own personality. Listen, read it out loud. You're going to have your own little issues. I type from instead of form all the time, or form instead of from. It's just a little thing I do. And so I need to catch those mistakes, and reading it out loud will help. But also, I don't know about you, but have you ever spent so much time on a project, you're like, I just cannot look at that one more moment, but I know it's not done. And so I've actually had the computer read it back to me. Close my eyes and listen to the words that the computer's reading back to me that I wrote. Does it make sense? I know it sounds robotic, but at least you get the content. Write conversationally, listen, Watch your sentence length. Sometimes it's okay to have a long sentence. They say 25 words is really the max. You shouldn't have more than 25. But sometimes when you're making a point, brevity counts. Sharpness counts. Put the period there. Make the statement. Be bold. Instead of long and lengthy and superfluous and going around the bend and there you go. So sometimes having that variety in the sentence length and also the sentence structure. If you always start the sentence the same way, it gets tiresome to read it. Read and analyze writers that you admire and watch your voice, that you maintain the same voice all the way through, and just start. And just don't stop. Because if you stop, I have one book that I stopped and started and I never went back to it. You got to stay on it and see it all the way through. And I know I drive people crazy because I'm just like a tenacious bulldog. I get something and I have to finish it, because if I don't, I won't. And pray before you write, pray as you write. Pray with the heart open to the Spirit. Write with the heart open to the Spirit of God. We want what we do to be anointed and blessed and Spirit-led and credible and in agreement with the Word. And so that's all that I had notes on today.